Next up is Inside Finance. Inside Finance is a special feature of this program every week where we discuss in depth the financial and economic challenges of our time and explore possible solutions. Here is your host this week, Stanford Simon.
Pleasant good day to Grenada, Caracou, Pity Martini, the rest of the Eastern Caribbean, wherever you are. I am Stanford Simon. It's a great joy to be with you. For those of you who are listening in New York, it is a joy to be with you without a shadow of a doubt. Coming to you live from SGBC Studio here in Grenada and here on SGBC Radio. It's a wonderful day here. It was all overcast in Grenada, but it is good to be with you today as we look to share some information with you. To all the folks who are listening in New York, the Bronx, Queens, oh yes, Utica, Long Island, wherever you are, and we're happy, New Jersey, we're happy that you're here with us. Now, today I have a very, very special person in the studio with me, and it is the governor, Mr. Timothy Antwine. And we'll be having a discussion what has happened. As you know, he took up his position earlier this year as governor of the Eastern Caribbean Central Bank. And running about 7 months, he's there. And we will hear what has been happening for the past 7 months in the Central Bank. So be prepared for a lot. And I'm sure you would learn a lot and you want to hear what's happening there. Good that you have joined us. Welcome to Inside Finance, as usual, Mr. Timothy Antwine, the governor of the Eastern Caribbean Central Bank.
Thank you, Pastor Simon. Thank you for having me, and good day to all of our listeners, home and abroad. It's great to be on the program once again.
Well, welcome home.
Thank you. It's no place like home.
No place like home. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you, and happy to be home with my family.
One would think, what brings you home? What brings you home at this time of the month, this time of the year?
Very simple explanation. It's family vacation. We've been working hard, and my daughters, our daughters, are, of course, out of school now. And so I thought it very appropriate at this time to spend some time with my family. We spent some of it in the U.S., where our first daughter was born, and then we came to Grenada to spend the rest of the vacation. So that's why we're here.
But all of that, how was your flight in?
Good, good. The air from St. Kitts was kind. So for that, I'm grateful.
Yeah, I like that. It was kind. I would guess for many of the folks in Grenada at this point, what would you want to say to them?
I've been seeing many of them as I moved around. And I just want to say to them again, thank you for all the support. It's amazing, even 7 months after assumption of office, I still get greetings conveyed through my parents and siblings, through friends, and then of course when I'm here in person, like we are now, people are still expressing to me how proud they are and how supportive they are of my appointment and extending their very best wishes. So it continues to be very heartening to hear that from my fellow citizens, and I'm grateful and thankful for all their present support.
We miss your preaching.
Well, thank you. I actually miss it as well, although I have started to do some in St. Kitts.
Oh, that's good.
I've been asked on several occasions. I don't know how the word got out, because I never advertised, I never suggested or anything, but I've been asked, and I've been preaching several times now. I've preached in St. Kitts, and I will continue to do that. It's God's work. And I'm happy to do it whenever I can.
Well, did you have a chance to see the Olympics? And what were your impression of Grenada's performance?
I did, and they were wonderful. So, first of all, I want to say that I was very pleased with the fact that Brazil was able to host very successful Olympic Games. Brazil is a developing country, of course a large one. Grenada, a small developing country, but as a citizen of a developing country, it's very important when we're on the world stage, when we give these opportunities, that we perform. I know there were a lot of concerns about Brazil's capacity and security concerns, much of which, of course, was not held by the political drama going on in the country. But I felt, certainly after seeing them host the World Cup football in the previous year, that Brazil was more than capable of hosting a successful Olympics. And from all accounts, these gave people of Brazil, the government and people for that effort. Now to Grenada. Wonderful. And how can it not be? Grenada won the Olympics again. I mean, for the second successive Olympics, Grenada came out number one. Why are you looking at me like that? We're number one in the world based on medals per capita.
Are you serious?
We are.
I didn't think that.
We are. And that has been, I mean, documented, I mean, scientifically established, that for a small country, we had the most medals per country, per population. With only 110,000 people, or just about, we got one medal. Last time around in 2012, Kirani gave us gold. This time around, he gave us silver. We number one again. This is a very important point. I mean, we smile about it, but it is a very important point because what it shows is that for a small country, we are able to compete with the best in the world, and that for pound, we are outperforming. We are punching above our weight as a country. These are very important considerations because we have to have self-belief. Because so often, you know, it's negative and we complain about what we don't have. We have to have self-belief about what we have and what we're doing. And what we're capable of doing. And what Kirani has done for us in 2012 and again in 2016 have put us number one in terms of medals per capita. Now, I'm a numbers guy, so no surprise, that's right. Where we will go. And somebody's actually done an index on this, so this is not just me talking, that shows Grenada at number one. So that even the big countries like the US and China and Britain, which are featured, when put in per capita terms, they get down to 30-something, 40-something in the world and so on. Grenada is number one. And so, but it is not just Kirani James. But I will say this, for putting us number one, both in 2012 and 2016, he absolutely deserves to have the stadium named in his honor.
Yeah, I agree.
I think it is right, it is fitting, it is proper, it is appropriate that the government and people of Grenada are going to confer that honor on our first Olympic gold medalist, and as of this date, our only Olympic medalist in Ambassador Kirani James. So again, congrats to Kirani and his team. Now, Kirani is not the only one who made us proud in Rio. You look at Braylon, two men, Grenada had Tough two men in the finals of the 400 meters, which is one of the hardest races in the Olympics. From a small country, two men in the finals. They have top the decathlon. We had two guys, one of which was in the top 10, Kurt Felix and his brother Lyndon Victor. And then we have our other athletes and our swimmers and so on. So they all made us proud. And kudos to the coaches and the management of the Grenada team and all the partners around the team. I'm very, very proud of Grenada's efforts. And the results show we are number one when measured in medals per capita.
Pong to pong.
Pong for pong.
Pong for pong.
We're number one. Punching above our weight. That's a tribute to this small country.
And that's good, as you rightly said, and it's something that we should be proud of. And again, I agree with you that the stadium being renamed after him is fitting at this point, and a population of 110,000, and to be performing that well. And he has given us that opportunity, and therefore it's fitting that we honor him. Now, tell us, how is things at the ECCB? You arrived there when? When you actually start your...
I assumed office on February 1st, 2016. So it's just about 7 months.
7 months. 7 months in the trenches, as they say, actually getting involved. How are things? What's happening?
A lot's happening and things are good. I think we... As a central bank, we're making significant strides, building on the success of the bank over time, building on the success of my predecessor, Sir Dwight, and before him, Sir Cecil Jacobs. Working with the team, leaders around the region, we are moving the bank forward. The central bank has done a lot of work and served very well for a long time. But one of the things we have to be very careful about is not to become complacent and sit on our laurels. And so I am constantly reminding everyone in the bank, myself included, that we have to keep adjusting, adapting, repositioning the bank to meet the challenges of the day. There's a saying from Jack Welch, which I quote often, If the rate of change in the market is faster than the rate of change in the organization, the end is in sight. I repeat, if the rate of change in the market is faster than the rate of change in the organization, the end is in sight. Simply put, if the external environment is changing and we're not paying attention, we're going to be left behind. We're going to become irrelevant. We're not going to be able to respond appropriately and in a timely way to the demands of the day. So really what it boils down to as the governor and CEO of the bank is making sure we get the right balance between what would be described as leadership and management. And management is a part of running the business of the bank,
right?
Running the business of central banking. And leadership is changing the bank. And we have to change. So we have to make sure we split our time appropriately between running the bank, usual operations, and changing the bank to meet the demands of the day. Whether those demands are digital currency and what is going on in that sphere, whether it is the risk associated with AML, CFT, whether it's the fact that you now have digital money, whether it's the fact that you have a number of developments with correspondent bank relations, any number of Brexit, on any given day, on any month, things emerge. And the key is for us to be constantly surveying the environment, seeing the risk and opportunities, because I also make that point. We also have to be constantly looking for the opportunities. And then my job is to ensure that we have both the mindset and skill set to meet these demands, to position the bank well so that we can serve better the people of the region, to give sound and what I call influential and thoughtful policy advice, and to be able to, for whether it's on the area of growth, debt management, financial stability, whatever the areas are. And I mean, there's so many areas, but our role is, one of our key roles is to be able to give what I call thoughtful and influential policy advice.
Now, when you assume office at the bank, you promised to launch a weekly podcast, which you have done. What has been the feedback to the podcast, and how is it impacting the bank as you have seen for the past few months since you did that?
Yeah, so thanks for the question. So you're referring to what our weekly podcast, which we call ECCB Connects.
Right.
ECCB Connects. By the way, the easiest way to find us is to go on YouTube. If you go there, you put in ECCB Connects, it's there. So since April, we've been doing this every week. I had promised on day one that we would do this. And my reason and motivation, very simple. I want to open up the bank. I want to make the bank more transparent, not simply in terms of our financial statements and so on, which we've always done, but to create a better understanding of what we do and why we do it and how we serve the people of our region. And in so doing, I'm hoping that people have a better appreciation of the bank, an openness to listening to what we have to share, and a dialogue between ourselves and our citizens about how we can help them to achieve their goals, how we can realize the aspiration of raising living standards in our region, addressing our vulnerabilities, and basically ensuring that we could realize our promise maximize our potential. So it's opening up the bank. And so far, I must say, I've been very, very pleased with the feedback we've got. Whether it is millennials, which would be the 30-somethings, 20-somethings, whether it's the older generation, or shall I say the more senior citizens, from all walks of life, we continue to get very positive feedback on ECCB Connects.
Because Ibn, I think for me and most persons, didn't understand what ECCB do. We know that they're our central bank. We know that they hold the money and make sure that our dollars stay stable.
Yes.
Outside of that, you really do not have a clue what are the other things that they do. The podcast that you're doing now has helped to explain different aspects of the bank. And for me, I didn't know that the bank do so much.
Indeed. It's lifting the veil. So I thank you for that. And I will want to be very clear that Grenada inspired that idea, because we started, you and I, Inside Finance in Grenada.
Yes.
You know, and of course, we did it for a couple of years before I left. And leveraging that experience, ECCB Connects was born.
Wow.
So, you know, we don't always know, but life prepares us for what is ahead. When I was doing this, when you and I were doing this, I did not know I would have an opportunity to serve as governor. Now that I'm serving, I've been able to take this idea, shape it, refine it, and use it for a regional audience. And I must say that I've been very gratified with what I've heard in terms of feedback. A couple of banks even told me that they're running it in the banks. Some people say they use it for capacity building sessions, but people are listening and learning. Yes. And it's whether you're a student, whether you're in academia, whether you're in policy, whether you're just a citizen who wants to understand what's going on with your central bank, it's useful. And I will just say before we move on that come September, we are going to have the second season, because we took a break after the end of July for August with holidays and so on. And there are going to be a couple new additions, innovations.
Wow.
I can't tell you. Don't ask me. I can't tell you right now. You'll see it soon enough. Okay. Because we constantly are going to work to improve it based on feedback and based on, you know, our own evaluation of the program. But thanks for asking.
Let me just remind our listeners, I'm speaking to the governor of the Eastern Caribbean Central Bank, Mr. Timothy Antwine. He assumed the responsibility from the 1st of February this year and 2016, and it's about 7 months into it. We're having a little talk with him. We take a break, and I come right back.
Come with your dream to the Grenada Development Bank, and we will find a way to finance it. Whether you want to start a business or refinance an existing project, whether you want a mortgage for house or land, or a loan for a vehicle, or your educational advancement, we have a special to finance your energy conservation overhaul for your home or office. They all come with the lowest interest rates. At the GDB, the People of Grenada Bank, we encourage ideas and we finance dreams. Come into us because the future is yours. The Grenada Development Bank. Empower, transform.
Welcome back to Inside Finance. I am Stanford Simon. With me in the studio is Mr. Timothy Antwine, the governor of the Eastern Caribbean Central Bank. Now, we have been having a challenge, I would say, and we've been hearing about it with the corresponding bank. What is the latest on that issue, the corresponding bank issue?
Right. So for most people, you would be aware of the issue of correspondent banks relations, or what is called the risking, which is where a number of correspondent banks like Bank of New York or Bank of America, which do business with commercial banks in our region, the Caribbean, have started to sever their relationships because of concerns they have. Whether those concerns have to do with anti-money laundering protocols, whether it has to do with, in many cases, high risk, low reward. In other words, when they look at what they're getting from the relationship versus the risk of something going wrong and it being fined by a regulator in the U.S., some of them have taken the decision to sever those corresponding bank relations. Now, if you want to do a wire transfer, you want to, somebody in the U.S. wants to send money through the bank to Grenada, for example, a family, or somebody at home in Grenada wants to send money to their child in school, studying at college, you need to use the bank. And when you do that, to do that wire transfer, you need a corresponding bank. You need a bank in the U.S. who will intermediate or facilitate the transaction. And that's the issue that we're having. So as a result of that, we've been working very hard on this issue. I must say that the dialogue is continuing at the moment. For example, at the central bank level, we're involved with the U.S. Treasury on this issue. The U.S. Treasury will be visiting the central bank in mid-September to have some further discussions. We'll also be doing some additional things in the central bank. One of the things, for example, that the Monetary Council agreed to do in our last meeting in July 22nd, is to give the central bank responsibility for doing AML-CFT supervision for regulated entities.
What is that?
AML is anti-money laundering, and CFT is combating or countering financing of terrorism. So those are two risks. Money laundering is a risk. That's where you wash the money. You do whether it comes from illegal activities and then you bring it through the system to clean it, that's laundering, or whether it is financing terrorism. In both cases, people, those persons would use or attempt to use the financial system, the banks. And the concern is that inadvertently or otherwise, we could have a situation where these illegal activities are facilitated by banks. And if that happens, the regulator will fine the bank in the U.S. And of course, because the bank in the U.S. is worried about that, and because their returns relative risk, they believe, are small, they've decided to sever that relationship. So what we've done in the case of the central bank, we'll be taking on additional responsibilities for actually doing the supervision for that particular risk when we do our on-site inspections. Because as you know, the central bank has responsibility for the supervision and regulation of all commercial banks and other financial entities under the Banking Act. But we do not have, at this moment, except in St. Vincent and the Grenadines, specific mandate in law to do AML CFD supervision.
So who does that?
Right now it's done in the countries, whether it is by the Money Laundering Commission or by the FIU. Typically, the countries have their own national entities, regulatory commissions that deal with that.
That take responsibility for that.
Exactly, whether it's Garfin in Grenada or whoever. So the central bank will have responsibility for any and all entities that are under the Banking Act, because the central bank has responsibility for all entities regulated under the Banking Act. So that's one development in an attempt to strengthen the area, but also work with the U.S. and others to not just strengthen, but provide comfort. So as I said, we're working with the U.S. Treasury on that in a very direct way. In addition to that, we are continuing to use the SWIFT protocol. So 11 of our 12 banks, 13 national banks, have now registered on the SWIFT protocol, which is a way of being able to track the wire transfers in the system.
So that's the SWIFT protocol.
That's the SWIFT protocol, right? So we had encouraged all of our banks to register, all our national banks, because the international banks do not have a problem, to use that as a way of providing more comfort to the corresponding banks. Because our view is, to the extent that we provide more comfort, then the risk gets reduced, then the probability of them severing or terminating the relationship goes down.
Okay.
In addition to that, several of our banks have been able to negotiate with alternative providers. So
individually?
Yes. Okay. Yes. So that, without going into particulars, what I can say is, because we're well aware as Central Bank, we've been in touch with the new providers, they have identified new banks in the US or the UK who are prepared, to provide those services for them. And so we're happy about that, because the truth is, you can't be a commercial bank and not be able to do wire transfers. A hotel needs to be able to pay bills abroad. They have to use the banking system to do that. You know, so it's about trade, tourism, remittances. It's about economic life. So it's a very serious issue. And we are making some progress on it. It's a work in progress. I must also mention that as part of our advocacy, we are arranging right now a global conference on de-risking, where we try to bring together everybody to just work through. Because what has happened is that while I'm trying to address the issue of money laundering, for example, of combating terrorism, financing of terrorism, there have been some unintended consequences.
Explain.
Well, Belize, for example, found that as a result of the decision to sever corresponding banks with most of the banks in Belize, all of a sudden, people's deposits were frozen. People could not access the deposit because they couldn't move the money. So you have money in the bank, but you can't move it because there's no facilitator. There's no corresponding bank to allow. Right. So you have business people in Belize who need to pay bills abroad. They're in the, say, the tourism industry, for example. They order stuff, they have to pay, but they can't. So the central bank had to intervene to try to do something, and that has helped in part, but it's not a full solution. Other people have been stuck for weeks, in some cases months.
Wow.
Some people have had to travel weekly or monthly to move money physically, which is, of course, a very, very untenable and hardly a safe and appropriate process to move funds, because the banks are not facilitating. So if left unaddressed, it has the potential to be disruptive to the financial system. And that's why this issue of correspondent banks is being taken very, very seriously. and why, as I said, at the regional level, starting with our prime ministers and the level of central banks, and of course the banks themselves, there's been this concerted effort to engage on these two together and then to engage with the U.S. authorities, whether it's Treasury, whether it's State Department, whether it's the regulators, the corresponding banks themselves, and others like the IMF and World Bank, CDB, IDB, to work together to find a solution to this problem. And it's not unique to the Caribbean. I mean, we obviously feel it most, and the research suggests that the Caribbean has been hardest hit. But we
Why so?
It's difficult to say. Obviously, we're closer to the U.S. The Pacific and Africa have also been affected, but the fact of the matter is that we are closer to the U.S. And the fact of the matter is also an issue over which we have no control, which is that when it comes to drug trafficking, we find ourselves caught in the middle from, where the producing South is supplying, is the consuming North.
And we're in the middle.
And we're in the middle. The Caribbean is almost like a transshipment area. So that's a natural challenge that we have because of geography. So I think because of proximity, that's probably why this has been given a lot of focus in the Caribbean. But to be clear, the issue of the risk in our correspondent bank is a global issue because banks in the Pacific and Africa have also been impacted. It's just that the research has shown that the Caribbean appears to be most impacted. There's also possibly the issue of the offshore banking side, which of course Grenada does not have an offshore banking sector now, but other countries which do, there may be some issues around that. The Panama Papers, the disclosures there did not help. They created further issues about offshore banks in the region and offshore banking in the region, international financial services. The unfortunate thing is that a lot of spotlight and focus, the focus has been on the Caribbean, not in the U.S., for example, where we know in Delaware, Las Vegas, and other places, they continue to do these things and it appears as if nobody's is saying anything. The concern we have in the Caribbean is that we need to respect the international standard-setting bodies. So bodies like the Financial Action Task Force, bodies like the Global Forum, which are the authorities, have said that the Caribbean has taken major steps, made great strides to address the issue of anti-money laundering and combating financing of terrorism. For a small size, we have done a lot.
Okay.
Of course, there's more that can be done, and together we must do more. But we've done a lot. And it appears manifestly unfair that the burden of these decisions, the risking, corresponding bank, the termination of these decisions, the burden is falling disproportionately on the Caribbean, given what we have done. The real issue for us at this stage is, one of the issues is that let us respect standard-setting bodies, which are the ones which determine who is doing what. They have said that we're doing a good job, and they are working with us to do an even better job. Do not make unilateral decisions which can disrupt our financial system. Do not make unilateral decisions.
Okay.
And that's what's been happening. Banks in the U.S. have been making unilateral decisions. Now, in fairness to these banks, they're being very rational. They are concerned about fines. They are concerned about penalties, they are concerned with reputational risk, as a result of which they're not taking chances. And rather than try to understand the problem, some of them have taken the easy decision
to cut.
Because it's dollars and cents. High risk, low reward, relatively speaking. But it's a dialogue we have to have because, they're not acting irrationally. While we don't like the decision, they're not acting irrationally.
They're looking at the realities.
They're looking at their realities.
Their reality.
Not ours, theirs, and doing what they think is best for them.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that those have unintended consequences for the international financial system. And of course, especially for us in the Caribbean. And when I say unintended, I mean negative unintended consequences.
Mm-hmm.
So together, we're trying to see how we can resolve these issues.
This is Inside Finance, the discussion I'm having here with the Governor of the Eastern Caribbean Central Bank, Mr. Timothy Antoine. He's in Grenada for a little holiday, and I got him to come into the studio, sit down, and talk with me. This interview would be in two parts. You will listen to the first part, and next week join me at the same time for the second part, where you would share with us information about the central bank itself, what is it the central bank really do? And also explain it to us about how central bank deal with money and information across the Eastern Caribbean. I am Pastor Stanford Simon, thanking you for joining me here today for Inside Finance. I do wish you a blessed, enjoyable and fulfilling week. I look forward to joining you here next week at the same time. Go to the website sgbcgrenada.com. This program will be uploaded there. Have a great week.
You have been listening to another edition of Inside Finance, a program that explores the financial and economic challenges of our time. Join us next week for another edition.